You're listening to Sports Connections with David Smale, the show that brings you a fun and intimate look into connections throughout sports. Now here's your host, David Smale.
Bob Davis is legendary in the Midwest for his 32 years as voice of the Kansas Jayhawks. His passion for the game and the university came through in his broadcast. Kansas fans loved his enthusiasm, and fans of opponents probably not so much, but his style is unmatched. He also spent 16 years as the television voice of the Kansas City Royals, where the sport dictated a calmer, smoother voice. He pulled that off with distinction. He and co-author Jeff Bolig recently released a book on Bob's career called The Dream is Real, My Life on the Airwaves. Jeff worked for Kansas in the Sports Information Office for many years, and together they recount some of the highlights of Bob's Hall of Fame career. Sports are great. Sports create some interesting storylines, and this is one of those storylines because I consider both of these men great guys and good friends in spite of their allegiance to KU. Gentlemen, welcome to Sports Connections.
Good morning, David. Great to be with you.
All right, I'm going to start with questions for Bob. Bob, you grew up in Topeka, Kansas, and attended Washburn University there. Did you grow up a fan of KU?
Well, I was really a fan of KU and K-State and Washburn and several other schools. I don't know that I had a particular favorite, although we were a little closer to Lawrence, but I liked all those schools and followed all of them and, you know, some of the high schools that I covered as well.
Okay, and then you went out to Fort Hays State. I don't remember exactly if it was right after graduating, but you spent 16 years at Fort Hays State before heading over to KU, and the Tigers had a lot of success there. They even had a Division II, I think at the time they were the NAIA National Championship basketball right. team with your time behind the mic. Talk about your years at Fort Hays State.
Well, a lot of great friends that are still there. I think of them a lot and don't get out there as much as we used to because we moved to Lawrence, obviously. But Hayes is a great town, great people. It's a good little sports town. And my timing was impeccable. I'd been there and then had a chance to be around the national championships that they won. So it's one of my observations along the years. It's more fun if the right team wins.
Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely true. You can do as a broadcaster, Jeff and I as writers, we can still do a good job covering right. a loss, but it's just more fun covering a win. And you certainly had experience doing that at Hayes and then coming to Kansas. Was KU your dream job when you were hired there, or was it just a really good job for a school that you were fond of?
Well, it was close to being a dream job. I had listened to the KU broadcast growing up, and some of the guys that had the job were favorites of mine. So it was kind of a natural move, I think. I didn't go to KU or K-State, so I was fairly neutral, I think. But it was fun. I could have done either school and enjoyed it as much.
You know, for those people who watched you broadcast, and we'll get into that just in a little bit here, but people who watched you sensed a passion. Before I found out a little bit of your background, I assumed that you went to KU, that you grew up, you know, just rooting for KU, hated K-State, hated Mizzou, whatever, because you were so passionate about KU athletics. How did that develop?
Well, I don't know if it really developed. I was just here. I would have done the same thing doing K-State games, I'm sure. I was a big K-State fan in grade school. We lived in Manhattan at the time, and I used to walk with a couple of my buddies. We were like sixth graders up to Hearn Fieldhouse and go see Jack Parr and Bob Boozer and those guys play for 50 cents. We could get in, and that was just absolute heaven. But I felt the same way about KU. So I guess I'm just a Kansan.
There you go. Could you have done it for Mizzou?
Well, in fact, I did several games one year, filling in for my pal, John Rooney, who had some TV conflicts. Okay. That's how I got associated with Learfield Communications. So I did Missouri, in effect, and I did KU, and obviously a little bit of K-State.
David, if I may add, you know, in the book, we talked to 50-plus peers, broadcasting peers, coaches, yeah. athletes, and I really think that helped kind of tell the story of Bob's career and activities that went on around it. And the one general theme I received from the broadcasters, and Bob can talk more about this, but the broadcasters in Kansas are very tight. There's a yeah. great camaraderie. And And I asked him, you know, what distinguishes Bob, or what did you learn from Bob? And to a man, everyone said that Bob's ability to tell you what is happening in the game and having a feel for the game without knowing the score, without him telling the score, you knew exactly who was ahead, who was behind, what the momentum was. And I think his ability to set the scene and be in the moment is probably what separates him. So that speaks, I think, to some of the passion as well.
Sure. I was thinking that you mentioned that you got into K-State basketball games for 50 cents. I bet you could do that today. they're having a difficult season, but I'm not going to pile on my own school. So we'll move on. Bob, your style was fun to watch. And that's interesting to say it that way, because primarily, at least with Kansas, you were a radio play-by-play guy. But I would sit behind you or near you on press row, either at KU, K-State games or Big 12 tournament games or whatever, and I'd watch you throw your hands up in the air and just be all, you know, just going crazy when there was a bad call. How did being so demonstrative become part of your style?
I don't know that it was a style that I developed. I think it just happened. I was just along for the ride. I always talk about Ernie Harwell. He always said he was the house by the side of the road watching the action. And that's what we are. So I don't think it's unnatural to react in some form, but it can't affect your broadcasts. And hopefully, it's certainly in a negative way. So hopefully that was the case. But, you know, you have to wiggle a little bit.
Jeff, as a longtime member of the sports information staff, did you guys ever worry that Bob would have a coronary during a game because he was so into it, and then you'd have to handle the media for that?
No, I had my own worries to worry about. It was great. And I noticed Bob's calling the game as well. I think it was great fun to watch he and Max, especially do the games. And, and one thing, if you notice, if you had a camera on them, is the great interaction and the amount of humor. And I think that's the one thing that Bob and Max and Bob and Split and anybody Bob did games with is there is just the appropriate amount of humor. In fact, as I talk again about people who were in the book, Ryan Lefevre says that people probably don't understand just how humorous and what a great sense of humor and storyteller Bob is. It's almost off the air where you get a better look at that. Yeah. But I think they just had so much fun. I think that was the thing, is you could really see how much fun they had doing the game together.
Absolutely. Bob, you want to add to that?
Well, I hope we had fun, because we did it for a long time. So that would have been awful otherwise. You know, we did have fun, genuine fun, and enjoyed the ball games. And I did learn early on, we got no control over who wins and who doesn't win and all that. So we'll make the best of it. But I did enjoy it. And win, lose, or draw, I was just happy to be that house by the side of the road.
Yeah. And my thinking is, how could you not have fun working next to Max Falkenstein?
David,
let me count the ways. Oh, no. I know. I understand what you're saying. No, we did have a lot of fun, most of which was off the air, I would hasten to add. But, that's one of the reasons I wanted to do this. I knew it would be fun.
Yeah.
And we'd have no control over who wins and who doesn't win. But, that's just part of it.
David, behind the scenes, this is kind of, you know, in the weeds that listeners do not know, but it's a funny story, is Bob and Max especially tell jokes during breaks, or they'd say something funny. And Max was a kid at heart. I mean, he was, he lived to be 95. He acted like he is 15, probably. But the great thing about Max is they'd start having this talk, and right before they're supposed to come back, Max would say to Bob, "Now don't make me laugh." And that was a common refrain between Bob and Max just before they're coming back on air, is, "Now don't make me laugh," because there was great humor between each other.
Max had the more capacity for having fun than anybody I've ever been around.
Yeah.
So that'll give you an idea how that worked.
Yeah.
That's great. You know, I'm going to recount the first time I met Bob. It was during the COSIDA convention in 1988, which was in Kansas City. KU had just lost national championship winning coach Larry Brown to the NBA. Bob was walking through an area and chatting with some folks, and I was part of that group. And he said that he had heard that Kansas was leaning towards hiring an assistant coach from Dean Smith's squad at North Carolina, had never been a head coach. And my thinking was, this guy is crazy. The defending national champions have to resort to a first-time coach. And that coach, of course, was Roy Williams. That turned out okay for KU, didn't it?
How'd that work? Yeah, I think it worked out pretty well. But I don't think Dean Smith would have gotten involved at all had he not felt that way.
Yeah.
Because Roy was certainly one of his guys. He had trained him. He was ready. He was ready to be a head coach. So you don't have to steal a head coach from somebody else. You can find one on your own, and he can be one of the best of all time. And that's how it worked out.
Yeah. You know, David, one of the stories in the book is Dick Harp, who was the Kansas coach in the 60s and head of the Fellowship of Christian Athletes, just a Kansas City and a tremendous person.
Right.
He went in his retirement to North Carolina to become an administrative assistant. And he and Roy became very close. And the story is, you know, we tell in the book is that actually Dick would call Bob Frederick, you know, because he probably had an inkling where he would leave at some point.
Yeah, didn't we all?
and he said this is like 2 or 3 years into Larry's tenure. He said your next coach could be Roy Williams. He's ready. And
really,
Roy had turned down, I believe, James Madison and a couple other you know mid-level schools. Dean told him to wait. So it wasn't. I don't think he wasn't getting offers. I think he was waiting for the right opportunity, and this was it.
And there's still people in Los Angeles that are not fans of Larry Brown, because he had announced right after the 88 championship that he was going to, I guess he told UCLA and they announced that he was coming. And then the morning of the press conference, I was friends with the basketball SID at the time. The morning of the press conference, he called him and said, I've changed my mind. And they're still upset. That's only 32 years ago.
There's quite a full court press at the 88 Final Four after the game. The Larry's friends from California came in, the Buttons. Remember, Bob, the Brown of Brentwood, instead of the Wizard of Westwood, he was the Brown of Brentwood. And there was a lot of effort. And you're right. The sports information staff at UCLA actually faxed the release to us to verify that everything was accurate. And of course that didn't last long, because the Spurs came a couple weeks later, and that made sense to go to San Antonio.
Now, Bob, you spent 32 years at KU, and obviously we talked about the years in Hayes as well. You broadcast half of the Jayhawks bowl games and more than half of their Final Four appearances. And I didn't look up that stat. The stat on the bowl games was, I saw it like referenced a year ago. I don't think that's changed. Sorry. I had to get my dig in. Can you pick a favorite memory? And I'm thinking about KU's first bowl game under Mangino, when you almost lost it on the radio, when the field goal cleared the crossbar and KU became bowl eligible. But that's one of my favorite Bob Davis calls. Do you have a favorite memory of those years?
Well, possibly the Orange Bowl would be right up there with Virginia Tech. They were a really good team, and it's a great ball game, and really put KU, it's a cliche, but on the map, because that was a legitimate opponent in a big time bowl game, and Mangino really had them ready to play.
Yeah.
And they had some good players on that team, many of whom went on, as they say, at the next level and did well.
Yeah, for sure. Any others?
Well, first time we went to a bowl game, Glenn Mason got him out to the bowl game out in California on Christmas Day, which was a new experience, and that worked well. KU did pretty well in bowl games when you look at it over the span of time. So Mangino used to say, we want to be known as a team that goes to bowls, but not just that. We want to be a team that wins bowl games. And he was pretty good at that.
Yeah, for sure. Jeff, what are some of your favorite Bob Davis memories?
Wow. Well, David, I grew up in Hayes, and you know, I tell people I probably listened to every year of Bob's broadcasting, but maybe years one and two are a little fuzzy. And
for me too.
You know, my best memories of Bob are probably off the air, just the travel.
Yeah.
You know, there are some funny stories that you can tell as you're riding in the van, traveling to Manhattan, passing through Wamego
Wow, that story.
Yeah. You know, it's that is the best. Just the relationship with Bob and being around him. You know, he's very humble, extremely humble, funny, great sports knowledge, and just a great ambassador for whoever he works for. And the one thing is, you know, in doing this book and people who wrote afterwards, I heard from some young broadcasters who talked about how Bob was so instrumental in their careers and helping them. And that's the one thing. Bob, he'd give you the shirt off his back. You know, he's that good of a person. So just my favorite memory of Bob is probably off the air. He's had some iconic calls. Obviously, the dream is real. The 88 Final Four, the last line there is important. But, you know, interestingly enough, I didn't get to hear Bob as much when I started working at KU in the Big Eight.
Right.
At the events. So it was always the post-game follows. And I should also mention one thing. You know, Bob is unbelievable as a MC at a banquet. He did all the sports banquets at Hayes High when I went to school there.
Okay.
And then he did Max Falkenstein's eulogy at his event. And tremendous, just tremendous. So too many highlights to count, I guess.
Bob, I remember interviewing you about the 2008 national championship game, the Mario Chalmers shot that sent the championship game into overtime. I was doing a story for the 2018 Final Four program, which ironically was back in San Antonio. So first I'll ask you if you remember your call of that shot, and then I'll tell you what you told me at the time. Do you remember what you said as that shot went up?
It was something that was similar to incoherent. I screamed something along the lines of, oh,
yeah,
but I'll never forget that. It was kind of sudden, and hopefully we got the information on the air eventually, but that was a great moment, and I'll never forget it. That's for sure.
That exactly what you told me in 2018. So I'm glad to know your memory is still good 3 years later, but yeah.
Yeah, not sure about that.
You know, that's one of the things I was talking about earlier is you are. Some people can get away with it as announcers. Some people can't, but you certainly could. They could. Listeners could tell that you were excited. You're a fan, and you should be. Now, if you were Jim Nance, you shouldn't be. But if you're doing just the KU game, you should be excited. And it was pretty obvious. that you were excited.
It went in. My goodness. Now what?
Well, as an announcer, how hard was it to come back down and say, okay, now we have five more minutes? I mean, those of us watching the game felt pretty confident that, and even though, yes, I'm a K-Stater, I was rooting for KU, felt pretty confident at that point Memphis was done and the game was over. Yeah. How hard was it to get back on a somewhat – even keel and announce broadcast the last 5 minutes of overtime?
Well, it was fairly euphoric because, like you said, you could look at the body language of the Memphis team and you could see they'd taken a hit, but the game wasn't over.
Right.
And so we had to go back to work. But that was just one of those moments. You can't prepare for moments like that. And when they come, you do your best. Hope it works. And I think it did.
All right. And you're – position, your broadcast position, most of the time, I don't know if it was for that, for the NCAA tournament, most of your time, your broadcast position is next to the coach. And I'm going to get into baseball here in a second, but one last basketball question. Do you have any favorite memories of things you can share with our listeners of being next to Roy Williams, well, Larry Brown, and then Roy Williams, and now Bill Self? Some things that maybe they said. I'll preface it this way. I was doing a MIAA tournament, and Emporia State was playing Washburn, I believe. And I was right next to the bench for Emporia State, and the head coach, and I can't think of his name, Ron something.
Ron Slaymaker.
There you go. Ron Slaymaker. Very good. Your memory's better than mine, sir. But
do I win anything for that?
Yeah, you win a free copy of Jeff's new book called The Dream Is Real. Ron is just piping mad. He takes his clipboard and he slams it down on the table right in front of me to complain about an official's call, then turns around, smiles at me, and winks. So I wasn't broadcasting, I was writing, but yeah. Do you have any memories like that with any of the three coaches at KU that you can share?
I don't think so. I don't ever remember being very close to one of the four A's coaches during a game. So you just, whatever reaction, that's what you had. But I know Ron, and I've known him for, you know, since the 70s. He's not a real emotional guy, but yeah. He wants to win like everybody else. He was a heck of a player, I can tell you that. So,
but at KU, did you ever have any moments with Larry Brown or Roy Williams or Bill Self?
I'm not sure they knew what I was doing, why I was there.
You know, what is he leaving? Yeah, David. You know, I work on the KU scores table, and I'm about 2 or 3 feet from Bill Self, and I did those games when later on with Roy. But I will tell you this: those coaches are so dialed in.
Yeah.
They really don't. You know, I remember one time Roy on the road, and I watched on TV. I think there was a bad call, and he turned to Bob and Max. And there's a particular official that they haven't won with. I can say it now. He's probably retired. It's David Libby. And it was a very good Pac-10 official. But I think Roy turned around to you guys and said, I don't think we've ever won a game with him. And other than that, I think the best thing, and these are kind of covered in the book, are kind of some of the things that are overheard on the air because of the crowd mics.
Yeah.
There's some really funny stories in the book on that. And but the coaches really are dialed in. They're focused. They're in the moment. And I think Bob would agree with me, especially Larry and Bill. I think because Bill's a protege of Larry's. You could watch a scrimmage for 30 minutes. Larry would blow the whistle, and he could recount every single move those players made. He is unbelievable in his recall. So they are dialed in.
He could also recount a play that the Kentucky Colonels made against North Carolina in the old ABA 30 years prior to that as well. Yeah. Basketball savant.
Right. Yeah.
All right. I want to switch gears. And this really relates to the fact that you had to switch gears many times. The seasons overlap because you were doing KU football and the Royals. Major League Baseball is just a different pace from college football and especially college basketball because of your proximity to the court. Did you have difficulty going back from calm, cool, collected Bob Davis doing the baseball games with Paul Splitorff to I can't believe he made that call? Do you have trouble transitioning?
Well, I hope not. I mean, I think you just have to do what it is. And they are different games and different, you know, one's run by a clock and the other's run by three outs in an inning.
Yeah.
So it's a different timing, but I don't ever remember having a problem with that. Maybe I wasn't smart enough to have a problem. Just let it go.
Yeah. Now, your 16 years as the voice of the Royals were, let's be nice, were lean for the team. How did you keep your spirits up for such a long season, for so many seasons?
Well, the one thing about baseball, and Split and I used to talk about this, going into a ball game, I don't care if you're playing the Yankees or the worst team in baseball, you don't know who's going to win.
Yeah.
Everybody wins some of the games. And, you know, and I did a lot of football games in my life where I had a pretty good idea who was probably going to win.
Yeah.
So that was the different thing. So, you can't control that. So you just wade into the pool and try to do the best you can about it. But I don't think not knowing who was going to win was a big factor.
Bob, what was the line you had? You and Split had the line, if they're going to play the games, it might as well be, you might as well do them?
Somebody's going to do these ball games. It might as well be us.
Yeah.
Split said that several times to me.
Yeah.
You know, that sounds like a good idea, Lefty.
Yeah. Split was a class act. I miss that guy. He was great.
I miss him every day.
Yeah. Do you have any, other than working with Paul Splitorff, that's who we're talking about. We all just call him Split, and we probably should identify him for the first reference as Paul Splitorff, Royals Hall of Fame pitcher and longtime broadcaster. But other than working with Split, do you have any memories of those 16 years that stick out for you?
Probably not. There were so many. I don't know that I could just pull one out of my little hat here and say this is the one that stands above all, because at the time that's the biggest one you've ever done.
Yeah.
So that's really how it works.
All right. I want to transition into the book. And Jeff, you've done a great job with telling stories as they relate to the book. So I want to just talk about the book. First of all, and for this is for either one of you, how did this book happen?
Jeff pounded me for months at a time, just beat on me, telling me, you know, we've got to do a book. Jeff had done two or three other books, so this was not, you know, something new for him, but he'd been wanting me to do it. And I really didn't see it from his perspective, a guy that had grown up listening to our broadcasts and that kind of thing. But I'm glad he did it, because now a lot of these stories are down, and my four grandchildren can read about it.
Yeah.
And they can say, Grandpa, didn't you really have a real job? All you did was my mother-in-law once said that she was asked what her son-in-law did. And she said, well, he doesn't really work. He just blabs. And I didn't really have an answer for that.
Yeah.
That was pretty accurate.
Yeah. I mean, that works. Jeff, your perspective on why you felt like it needed.
Yeah. You know, I think I approached Bob just before he retired and said, Bob, I think we should do a book on your career. And Bob's very humble. He said, it's not about me. It's about the players. It's about the coaches. And I said, I understand. I said, but I think we can use your career as a platform to tell stories. And if you read the book, it's not all about Bob Davis. It's really
no.
What went on around Bob. If it was just about Bob, we could do a pamphlet probably, but no.
Yeah.
But no. So I hounded him for a while, and then, you know, we decided, and then, you know, life got in the way, kids, grandkids, all that kind of stuff. And then just odd timing, right before the pandemic hit, you know, it was in basketball season, and you know, I had some co-conspirators in this. They said, you know, we really need to get this book done. And so I think there was some little prodding to Bob. And finally, I think it was maybe right around mid-February, we said, let's do it. And so that's when we started to do it. And then, of course, when the pandemic hit, you know, that meant I wasn't going into the office right away and wasn't traveling. And so I had a little more free time. And the easy part was just talking to Bob and letting the stories flow and conversations and figuring out what to leave out.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say that would be the hard part, is what's getting cut on the, you know, left on the, cutting room floor, is, you know, to not be included, because you could probably do a book this thick on it with all the stories that you had.
Yeah, David, I say the postage, you can't have the postage be more than the book. So we had to end it at some point. But it was, you know, the chronological, the ongoing of Bob's career, that's kind of set the format for it. And we let other people help tell the story. And so that's the great thing to see. You know, personally, talking to Tony Muser was great, and Mike Sweeney and Ryan Lefevre and all those guys. And that was great. You know, they would talk to me or talk to Bob. You know, a lot of times I did the calls, or we did a few together, and they'd call Bob right back, and you'd talk for another hour or so.
Yeah,
it was good.
Now, clean it up a little bit, but I understand you have a second book. Maybe it's not ready, but it's talked about. What would the title be of that second book? Please clean it up a little.
Well, you know, Bob, you know, we've talked about maybe all the blank we forgot the first time, all the stuff we forgot the first time. And Bob had another one. There's a story in the book about Roy Williams feeding the dolphins at SeaWorld, which got him in trouble with the guards and the attendants at SeaWorld. And so maybe the second book would be Don't Feed the Dolphins. You know, so
there you go.
Don't forget to feed the dolphins.
Yeah, so anyway.
Or they love popcorn.
They don't. Basically, in that story, Dave, we can't leave you hanging on that one. Max and Bob were there at the seeing the dolphins, and Roy walks up with some popcorn and says, do you think you could feed the dolphins? And Max, of course, and Matt, this is perfect, Max. Well, I don't see why not.
They love popcorn.
Max says, go ahead. So Roy starts pitching popcorn into the dolphins, and probably from 5 miles away, this guard comes sprinting, blowing the whistle. And of course, Roy turns to Max, and Max is nowhere to be found. He helped commit the crime, and then he's
five pools away.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Or how to properly spit in the Mississippi River. It could be another title.
Exactly.
Dealing with Roy Williams. So
maybe you had to be there.
Yeah.
That'd be a good title.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask both of you the same questions. I'll probably alternate back and forth. And again, feel free to you know, step on each other if you want. Regarding the process of the book. So first of all, I'll start with Bob. What was the process like?
Well, I've said this many times. Jeff did almost all the work. I can't take credit or blame. So Jeff worked, it was a labor of love, I know, because it was his idea. But it was just great. And he'd call me or send me some script to read. And you know, the fact that he had lived in Hayes, knew those yeah. people, and had been at Lawrence with me virtually the same time, it's a good thing we had another guy with a good memory, because he did a great job. He really did. And he made the old guy look good.
Jeff?
I thought Bob would say, well, it was a process, like he said, painful. No, the writing of the book was the easiest part. I mean, who wouldn't want to sit down and talk to Bob Davis for hours and listen to his stories? And like I said, you know, it was a little bit going back and reliving some of our previous life with others. You know, you can't imagine the response that we've received from people back, Bob's classmates at Independence, you know, in grade school. And then some of the young announcers I mentioned, some people in Hayes, some of the people who just contributed, that was the best part. So the process was very easy from the standpoint of, you know, David, as you know, as an author yourself, getting started may be the toughest part. You know, we you never start with the title because you know that'll you'll be stumped forever. But we just kind of had a working title. And then one day, probably halfway through the process, it hit me that, hey, this has to be the title. But it was a very easy process to work with Bob, and we had a great time.
Nice. Right. Jeff had an outstanding editor.
Yeah. You know her, David.
Is that Lori?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, she's good. She is real good. Plus, she's fun to hang around with. So.
Yeah.
What was the hardest part of the process for you, Jeff?
I think the hardest part of the process was kind of working that once I thought this would be like a multi-year project, you know, just kind of work, you know, but then we thought, okay, with the holidays coming up, maybe you can finish it and get it out. Well, to have a book ready for the holidays, you really have to have it buttoned up and wrapped up early October, you know, if not yeah. earlier. And so I think the whole process of marketing it, getting it in stores, kind of the behind the scenes logistics, those are the most difficult, just making it available to people. You know, I will say we don't intend to be on the bestseller list. And, you know, the fact that Obama released his book really hurt our opportunity there. But
yeah, it was that one or yours. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly.
It was close.
It was, but I think, you know, just that all that back end marketing and logistics and the way we self-published, you know, David, you're a self-publisher, that takes a little more time than having a full-time publisher, but that was probably the most difficult part.
What about for you, Bob? What was the hardest part?
Well, I was driving Jeff crazy, probably calling him every half hour, every day. So you'd have to say, if I could get him off my back, this would be a pretty easy project. But no, I was floundering around in the deep end of the pool, hoping I didn't sink. But Jeff was a great mentor in this project. And the fact that he wanted to do it, and it was really, in effect, his idea, was a big plus for us.
And I had on my list of questions to ask, knowing what you know now, would you do it again? Obviously, you're thinking about doing another one. So the answer to that is yes. So, Bob, do you have a favorite story that's told in the book that you haven't shared so far today?
A favorite story that I haven't shared? I don't know that I do. I liked all of them. And some of them, when you see them in print and you read it back, you say, well, that was a pretty good story. Sometimes they come out in the end of the wash better than they looked when they went in. So I don't know that I have a favorite, but it's just the whole scheme of things and the fact that we actually have a tangible thing we can hold in our hand and say, hey, we did it. That was kind of fun.
Yeah. How about you, Jeff? You have a favorite story?
There are a lot of good ones. I did not know a lot about Bob's early career, but when his dad was a sports writer in Independence, Kansas, And they covered the old Kansas, Oklahoma, Missouri League, which was Class D rookie league baseball. And the shortstop for Independence was a 17-year-old Mickey Mantle.
Oh, wow.
And Bob, don't you have a baseball signed by Mick Mantle? Isn't that what he went by?
He was, as a young kid like that, he signed his autograph Mick Mantle. I've seen it on some other things that he signed that year. So that was kind of interesting. Not Mickey, Mick. I'm a big boy.
Yeah, but Bob, you're 17. Yeah. Your favorite player, Bob, was not Mickey, but someone else. Who was that?
Next year, Bill Verdon was the center fielder for the Independence Yankees. And, of course, he went on to be a solid major leaguer for many, many years. And I've had a chance to talk to Bill a couple of times over the years. And a great gentleman in his own right, not Mickey Mantle, but a solid major leaguer for a long time.
And a long career as a manager, too.
Absolutely. In fact, there's a good trivia question there. Bill managed the New York Yankees for a season. And, you know, he never won a game in Yankee Stadium. Isn't that amazing? The Yankees played in Shea Stadium. Yeah. So he never won a game in Yankee Stadium. He thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah, that's a good question. I lived in New York during that time, and I remember going to Yankees games at Shea Stadium.
Yeah.
But I couldn't have told you who the manager was. So that's definitely – I'm going to call Stump the Chumps next week and ask him that if you haven't already done so.
No, I haven't. Have at it.
All right. I know you guys aren't trying to make millions off of this, and you're not trying to get on the New York Times bestseller list, but being friends.
Put us down easy.
Yeah. Well, being friends with both of you, I want you on that list.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
I want to say I'm friends with a New York Times bestseller. So tell us where the book is available, the place that you guys make the most money when people buy it from there.
Okay. Well, it's in about 17 Dillon stores in Kansas. If I get these right, it's Lawrence, Topeka, Wichita, Hutchinson, Derby, Andover, Salina, and Hayes. I think I got them all. And they're also available online, you know, obviously Amazon. You can go to Barnes & Noble has it. And we're looking at some other retail outlets in Kansas City that maybe after Super Bowl will start carrying it. So, you know, really with the pandemic, we tell people to be safe. Amazon is probably the easiest way to get it to you. And we hope to have some book signings later on once everybody gets their COVID shots and we're out of this mess. So hopefully in the summertime, we can do some book signings.
And you have a website where you'll put those book signings when they're coming up?
Yes. Yeah, so you can go to the website, bobdavisthedreamisreal.com, and they'll have more information on where the stores, the actual Dillon stores, and where we'll have the book signings and such. So that is right.
And Bob, since Jeff did all the hard work with writing, you're doing all the stuff with the website, right? You're handling all that technical stuff?
I wasn't even there when it happened.
All right, guys.
My heart was.
This has been great fun. We've joked about the fact that, you know, I root for K-State, but I still love you guys. It's so much fun to be able to chat with you, you know, as an author myself, to know the processes that you went through and to see the friendship that's very real. So I appreciate you joining me today and thank you for being a guest.
Okay, David.
Great being with you.
Thanks for listening to Sports Connections with David Smail. Make sure to subscribe, follow, and rate the show from your favorite podcast platform. You can learn more about David Smail and his work by visiting davidsmailbooks.com. Don't forget to join us weekly for new episodes. Until next time.